This is Family Policy Matters. This program is produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council, a pro-family research and education organization dedicated to strengthening and preserving the family. And now from the studio, here's John Rustin, president of the North Carolina Family Policy Council.
Thank you for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. It is our pleasure to have Nancy Piercy with us on the program. Nancy is professor and scholar in residence at Houston Baptist University and a fellow of the Discovery Institute. She is the author of the 2005 ECPA Gold Medallion Award-winning book, Total Truth, Liberating Christianity from Its Cultural Captivity. And she co-authored the best-selling book, How Now Shall We Live, with Chuck Colson and Harold Fickett. Formerly an agnostic, Nancy studied under Francis Schaeffer at Labrie Fellowship in Switzerland, and she has been heralded as America's preeminent evangelical Protestant female intellectual. Nancy's latest book is Finding Truth, Five Principles for Unmasking Atheism, Secularism, and Other God Substitutes. And we are delighted to have her with us today to share some insights from that book. Nancy, welcome again to Family Policy Matters.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, it's great to have you with us. Now, Nancy, in Finding Truth, your new book, you share your personal conversion story, how you went from rejecting Christianity as a teenager to becoming an agnostic and then eventually returning to the Christian faith. Tell us, if you would, a little bit about your journey of faith.
Right. I was raised in a Christian home, but about halfway through high school, I started having questions. And really, the main question was simply, how do we know that Christianity is true? I had a lot of secular friends. My closest friend was Jewish. And so I simply wanted to know, how can we be certain that Christianity is true? Unfortunately, none of the adults in my life could answer that question. My parents, pastors, and others, no one seemed to have an answer for it. Most of them dismissed it as a psychological problem. A seminary dean once said to me, "Don't worry, we all have doubts sometimes," as though it were just a psychological phase. And eventually I decided Christianity didn't have any answers. And so I set it aside and decided I was going to have to determine all by myself what was true and what was false. And I embarked on a very intentional search for truth, reading philosophies, reading other religions, and so on, and went through several years as an agnostic. And it was later, when I was going to school in Germany, that I came across the ministry of Francis Schaeffer, which was called Labrie in Switzerland. And that was the first place I heard Christians who could make arguments, arguments for Christianity, showing that it was true, showing that it was supportable, showing that it was rational. And that's what it took until I was intellectually convinced, you know, there was nothing that was going to make me go back to Christianity. And so I wrote my new book, Finding Truth, to help other people who have questions like I did and help them to find solid answers.
Well, I think a lot of our listeners can relate to that, and whether they went through the experiences that you have or just have had questions at times, I think it's certainly a real life challenge, struggle that people do have about faith, about what it's all about. And so I'm really appreciative of you sharing that with us about your experience. Now, Nancy, one of the catchphrases you heard as a questioning high school student, which is similar to what many young people hear today, is something along the lines of "don't think, just believe." And you describe in the book that tendency in some Christian circles to overemphasize what some refer to as, and I'd say, quote, heart faith at the expense of intellectual faith, which you've mentioned. Why is this "don't think, just believe" mentality dangerous for the church? And what do you believe does it have to do with so many young people leaving the Christian faith when they get to college?
Well, in my book, Finding Truth, I quote studies on why young people leave the faith, why they left behind the religion of their upbringing. And the researchers expected to find that young people would refer to emotional reasons, you know, emotional wounding, I was hurt, I had relationship issues. They were surprised that by far the most common answer given was, "I left the church because I had unanswered questions and doubts." And I think that this is what we often overlook. In fact, one of the studies was open-ended. So these were just the kids speaking in their own words. There was no power of suggestion effect. And overwhelmingly, they said they had intellectual doubts and questions. So I think that we overlook this when we plan our schools and our youth groups and our churches and so on, is that young people, certainly in the high school and college ages, this is when they're really struggling with trying to find a worldview and really rethinking Christianity for themselves, even if they've been raised in it. They have to rethink it and make it their own. And this is the age when we really need to be giving young people the tools to think critically, to think well, to think intelligently, so that they are able to see that the Bible really does have better answers than any non-Christian worldview does.
Well, I know in the book you argue that critical thinking for Christians actually saves faith. Explain what you mean by that and how important it is for young Christians to develop critical thinking skills.
Well, I was once invited to be on a radio program with a host who was very secular. His name is Barry Lynn. You probably know him. He's the executive director of Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, the organization that's done so much to try to eliminate any traces of Christianity in the public realm. At any rate, I had written my earlier book, Saving Leonardo, and he said, why did you write a book about ideas and worldviews? And I said, well, I want Christians to understand their world better and to develop critical thinking. And he burst out, he interrupted me and burst out, critical thinking. Conservative Christians would say that's dangerous. Well, it's really just the opposite. Critical thinking is what helps Christians to keep their faith. G.K. Chesterton once said, yeah, sure, ideas are dangerous, but they're actually more dangerous to the person who's never studied them, because then he will have no mental filter. Chesterton used the image of a teetotaler. He said, if you've never drunk any wine before, then a new idea will fly to his head like wine to the head of a teetotaler. He's more likely to become intoxicated. So finding truth is designed to help people avoid being intoxicated. I was talking to a mother not long ago who said she'd made a mistake. When she raised her kids, she raised them with the rule, you don't need to read anything but the Bible. We don't need to expose ourselves studying secular worldviews. Her son went off to college, joined a new atheist group, and abandoned his Christian background. She thought that by not exposing her son to secular ideas, she was protecting him. Instead, she had left him defenseless. So we need to understand, as our culture becomes increasingly secularized, young people need to be forewarned and forearmed with the kind of ideas they're going to encounter when they leave home, so that they can be prepared to answer, as 1 Peter says, to give an answer to anyone who asks of them.
Well, absolutely. And Finding Truth has been described as a real-world training manual for Christians. In the book, you offer five principles to help Christians based on Romans 1. Now, we don't have time, unfortunately, to discuss all five at length, but I'd like to spend a few minutes on principle number one, which you call identifying the idol. If you will, give us an example of how this might apply in the area of public policy and the issues we face daily here at the Family Policy Council, particularly as it relates to marriage and homosexuality.
Right. The dominant worldview in the academic world today is materialism. Matter is all that exists. This is what's shaping the thinking of our leadership classes. And it shapes their thinking about the human body and sexuality and these kinds of issues. What does materialism imply? Well, in an earlier age, people understood that God had created the material world. And so nature reflected God's purposes. And that included the human body. The difference between male and female, that complementarity there, was understood to reflect God's purposes. And God had pronounced it to be very good. And our physical bodies themselves gave us clues to who we are and how we should live. It gave us clues to what our moral behavior ought to be. What got rid of this purpose-driven view of nature? Primarily the theory of Charles Darwin. Darwin's theory of evolution was promoted specifically to get rid of any notion of purpose in nature. Well, what did that mean for morality then? It wasn't just a matter of a new view of nature, but if nature was a source of morality, for the first time, people began to look at the body as being something that gave us no clues to who we are, no clues to God's good purposes. So understanding this background is crucial for understanding things like homosexuality. Think of it this way. Biologically, physiologically, males and females are clearly counterparts to one another. And so engaging in homosexual practice requires you to contradict your own anatomy, right? To override the obvious design of your body, of your own biology, which the implication is biology really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to who you are. It's not part of your authentic self. And we need to help people realize this is a profoundly disrespectful view of the human body, because it treats the body as having no intrinsic purpose or significance. It has a self-alienating and fragmenting effect on people. We need to help recover the notion that the biblical view respects our biological identity. It affirms our integrity as embodied persons. We are embodied. That's how God created us. There's nothing wrong or bad or evil about a body. It's part of who God made us. And so this gives us an ability to present the Christian view in a very positive light. What we can argue is that the biological correspondence between male and female is not some cosmic accident. It's part of what God originally created and pronounced very good. So finding truth makes argument that the Christian worldview is not only true, but actually grants higher worth and higher dignity to the human person than any secular view.
Now, Nancy, getting back to our earlier discussion, you argue again that learning to think critically about the Christian faith and even testing it against other beliefs is a very healthy part of developing a stronger faith. Now, as a parent of two teenagers, I know that parents can get a little bit concerned when their kids start asking questions about other religions and exploring the ideas that are propagated by other religions. How should parents respond when their son or daughter starts questioning the faith or asking questions about conflicting worldviews?
Well, it's very important to take questions seriously. I think a problem is that we have so redefined Christianity in emotional terms that we no longer do the hard work that it takes to research and find answers. In other words, your typical church-based youth group today, the strategy tends to be, can I engineer events that will ratchet up their emotional commitment? Can I get them emotionally engaged? And the assumption is that emotional engagement will rule out their questions. Well, the studies show that that's not happening, that emotional engagement does not get rid of genuine intellectual questions. And we need to respect young people as made in God's image with a call to love God with all their minds, as well as their heart, soul, and strength. We often overlook the mind part of that. They were called to dress young people's minds and answer their questions. And like I said earlier, the studies show the main reason young people are leaving the faith is they're not getting answers to their questions. I was just rereading that survey because I had people challenge me on it. They said, oh no, really it has to do with relationships, and if you have good relationships, you'll stay. The studies are just not showing that. When young people are given the opportunity to say, does it have something to do with your relationship with your parents or relationships in the church, the number who said yes was very, 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 very low. Compared to that, the number who said I had intellectual doubts, I had skepticism or questions about aspects of Christianity that were not getting answers, those were the main reasons that young people themselves gave. So in finding truth, I give parents a strategy that they can use for answering any question from the perspective of any worldview, religious or secular. And so instead of having to master every single worldview out there, which could take a lifetime, finding truth gives you a strategy based on scripture that you can apply to any worldview that your child may be wondering about.
Well, Nancy, unfortunately, we are out of time for this week, but I really appreciate your time and your great insights. Where can our listeners go to learn more about and also to order a copy of your excellent new book, Finding Truth?
Well, I do have a new website. It's called nancypiercy.com. Very simple, nancypiercy.com. My husband is publisher and editor of The Piercy Report, P-E-A-R-C-E-Y. The Piercy Report, you can order it there. And then, of course, you can order it through Amazon.com, ChristianBooks.com, and any of the normal brick-and-mortar Christian bookstores as well.
Nancy Piercy, thank you so much for being with us on Family Policy Matters and for sharing insights from your new book, Finding Truth. And I do want to encourage our listeners to make sure that they get a copy and read that valuable text.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate being here.
Family Policy Matters is an information and analysis feature of the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Join us weekly for discussion on policy issues affecting the family. If you have questions or comments, please contact us at 919-919-919. 877-807-0800 or visit our website at ncfamily.org.